Good morning and welcome to Good Health Live, brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Caitlin Kozad, and for today's program, we have the opportunity to learn about internal medicine from one of our newest internists to practice in our community. So joining me today is Dr. Guy Fogg. He's an internist at Good Shepherd Medical Group's Internal Medicine Clinic located at 600 Northwest 11th Street, Suite E37. Dr. Fogg has been with Good Shepherd just under a year now, and he practices with four other internists at Good Shepherd, Drs. Timchuk, Larson, Toon, and Thompson. Dr. Fogg, thanks so much for being here with us today.
It's my pleasure, Caitlin. Thanks for having me.
So where are you originally from, Dr. Fogg, and what brought you to Hermiston and the Good Shepherd family?
So originally I was born in Winnipeg, Canada. For those who don't know, if you've ever been to North Dakota and you want to find the big city and you just drive north, you'll run into Winnipeg. So that's where I was born. I was brought up there for the first few years of my life, and my mom wanted to be a midwife, and they didn't have any midwifery colleges in Canada at the time, so she uprooted us and we all moved to England. So I spent 3 or 4 years there, made many friends, kept many of them, and I moved back to Canada. I finished up grade school, high school, did college, and I went to medical school. And in my rotations, I ended up in Kansas City, and I loved it so much down there, and I wanted a change of pace. So I applied for a residency program there, and I got it, and I did my residency there for the following 3 years. And afterwards, I didn't have enough training yet, I didn't feel, so I stuck around for an extra year of fellowship training in geriatric care. So moving from Winnipeg, which was probably the flattest place on earth, to Kansas City, which is the second flattest place on earth, I looked for mountains, and Oregon had a bunch, and I guess it was kind of luck that brought me here. I was looking for a job, and Good Shepherd was looking for a provider, and we kind of had similar wants and needs, and we were able to accommodate each other, so that's kind of how I wound up here.
So what made you want to become an internist?
So what drew me to internal medicine was that I wasn't exactly sure about what I wanted to do. I guess when we were in medical school, we were taught that there's several different pathways where your future career will diverge from. So you could practice surgery and be a surgeon, and there's, you know, a myriad of different subspecialties within that. Or you could do more what was considered medicine, and that means it's kind of more of a thinking game, sitting down and working through a problem as opposed to, you know, knowing what the problem is and cutting it out, essentially. So internal medicine was one of those branching points. It's really kind of the stepping off point. If you ever wanted to do any sort of subspecialty work in any sort of organ system, you'd probably want to start with internal medicine first. You could be pretty well versed in pretty much anything that anybody could throw at you, but by no means an expert. You'd have to know kind of just enough to get you in trouble and to know when the water's getting too deep for you before you'd refer it on down the line. But that's kind of where internal medicine is. You're a primary care provider, but you're also a gatekeeper to a timely referral to a specialist.
So, Dr. Fogg, you had mentioned that you had taken some extra studying for being a geriatrician. Can you define what that is for our listeners?
So a geriatrician, I'd like people to think about it basically as the opposite of a pediatrician. So you see a pediatrician in your younger years and you're referred on to adult medicine, and that could either be with an internist like myself or any other general practitioner like family medicine or whatnot. And once you pass a certain age, I guess the official number is 65, but I like to think that it's variable among all people. I've met some very, very old 40-year-olds, and I've met some very, very young 80-year-olds. But generally, the line in the sand that somebody arbitrarily drew, I think it was Medicare, to be honest, was 65. And that basically just means that there you should start thinking about problems a little bit differently, sort of how you think of problems a little bit differently when it comes to children and children's medicine.
Certainly. And who are the other providers that have that geriatrician specialty as well?
Dr. Toon is also a practicing geriatrician. I'm very happy to work with her.
Yes, Dr. Toon. Okay. So tell us a little about the scope of your care. What do internal medicine physicians actually do for their patients?
So like I was talking about a little bit before, the primary role of internal medicine is basically to be a primary care provider, but with a little more emphasis on chronic diseases that follow people through their lifetimes.
Yeah, so what are some examples of some conditions that you care for?
Well, I guess the run-of-the-mill garden varieties are usually hypertension, cholesterol issues that could put you at an increased risk for stroke or heart attack later on in life. Diabetes is pretty common in this community. Chronic pains, having to deal with arthritis and, you know, just the wear and tear of one's body as the years kind of weigh on you. Those are pretty much the bread and butter of what I deal with.
And then you also care for, you know, preventative care and such like that, right?
That's right. That's mostly what I like to focus on, but I think sometimes my patients have different priorities when they come and see me. I usually try and set basically a schedule. I like to them for them to at least be able to address a couple, three problems that are important to them, and that way I can wiggle in my preventative care. I think it's preventative care, unfortunately, isn't a very compelling or enticing topic. It's really dealing with things that aren't at the forefront of anybody's attention right there and then. I want to deal with things that are going to come back and bite you in the behind, you know, 15, 20 years down the road. And when you address these things early on, it's a hard sell because they don't hurt. They don't really cause you anything but inconvenience by trying to address them. And that's my particular boulder to roll up the hill.
Absolutely. Preventative care is so important. So tell us about your care philosophy and what a patient should expect in your care.
Well, like I was saying, with rolling that boulder up the hill, I don't want to do that job all myself. So I think my first job is providing education. I think my role in my particular job is to try and distill all the knowledge that I picked up in medical school and college and give it to my patients so that they can put it in their own framework of their day-to-day and make decisions that would hopefully kind of mirror my own for their care going down the road. And once I feel like that's there, then pretty much all the weight is taken off of me and I can rely on my patient's own free will to kind of pick it up from there and make wise choices in their healthcare and how they live their lives so that they can make it to old age.
Yes. So, how do you determine the best treatment for your patients? Does it start with an in-office assessment, a referral?
Everything starts with me in the office. With some exceptions. Basically, what I like to do is compare the patient or their problems to basically all the stats and science that I know and make a plan that kind of goes with the accepted guidelines with, you know, the patient's own lifestyle and own belief systems and, unfortunately, also their insurance. we have to kind of come up with a way that we can get to our goals together, but making sure that, you know, it's a patient's choice.
Yeah, so are there any in-office procedures that you are able to provide?
I am able to provide some few procedures in my clinic as it is. Right now, they're pretty much restricted to large joint injections, elbows and shoulders. One of my partners, actually, Dr. Timchuk, he's got a larger expanse of that practice. He does far more joints than just knees and shoulders.
So let's dive into, you know, a current topic about the COVID-19 pandemic. What has it been like caring for patients during a full-on pandemic? Have you offered some virtual visits? How have you and your team been navigating all this?
It's been complicated, Caitlin. I think the biggest issue is there's no real guidelines written out yet. Everything that we learn about it ends up being unlearned. Within a couple weeks span, and we're just all kind of keep up with it. So to your question, yes, I do offer virtual visits. I like to leave it up to the patients. I want everyone to be comfortable when they're talking to me, if they're comfortable coming into the clinic and, you know, risking exposures to other people while waiting in the waiting room to see me. They're welcome to. If they don't feel comfortable with that and they'd rather do something over, you know, a smartphone or their computer, then I welcome that sort of thing as well. We're well equipped to, you know, have these visits scheduled and dealt with. I think it really just depends on what the patient is willing to expose themselves to and what their questions they want answered to. I mean, if it's really just sort of something that can be done through a conversation, then yeah, obviously a virtual visit is probably better and safer. But if, you know, you have a sore knee or, you know, a runny nose or a sore throat you want me to look at, I can't really well do that over a webcam. I'll try, but it's hard.
Yeah, and how do they go about doing the virtual visits?
Well, much like how they would schedule a visit normally, basically just call my office, see if I have any availability, and set up a time. And other than that, it's completely the same. One of my nurses will call the patient a little bit before their clinic visit would start, just to kind of go through the legal stuff and the insurance stuff and, you know, kind of verbally acknowledge a disclaimer that, yes, I'm going to do this visit over the internet or over the phone, and I can't do a physical exam, so we're going to be limited in what we can do and diagnose, but that's essentially it. Otherwise, it's business as usual.
Yes, I think a lot of our providers have been able to transition successfully during the pandemic to offer, you know, care virtually whenever possible, you know, to keep folks at home and not having to leave their homes. So that's excellent. I also understand you've been doing some hospitalist shifts at Good Shepherd. What has it been like helping in that capacity?
Well, working in the hospitals, a completely different animal than working in the clinic, and that's part of the reason why I joined this practice, was that they were allowing me to work part-time in the clinic and part-time as a hospitalist. It's a very different feeling taking care of someone on the day-to-day. You develop a different sort of relationship. It's more intense but shorter lived. You basically live and breathe with this patient in the hospital for the days that you're with them and while they're in the hospital, and you know, they come in sick and you help get them better and you get to see them go, and it's a lot more satisfying in that respect. And in the clinic, it's a different animal. You get to kind of learn a bit more about how people live and what their life looks like and follow them for months and years at a time. So it's a little slower pace, but probably more meaningful, to be honest. It's just, it's kind of a delayed gratification sort of thing, as opposed to in the hospital, I can get my fix pretty quick.
Yeah, short-term care versus long-term care. So one question I wanted to kind of throw at you. I think we've seen some healthcare workers across the country really questioning their reasoning for working in healthcare and in some cases wanting to pursue a career change amidst the pressure of the pandemic. What do you think has been on their minds the past several months?
Well, I will dodge this question, basically because I don't think it's restricted to just healthcare workers. I think everyone's feeling the crunch right now, and it's you know, it's me and everyone else wondering what is going on and how do we deal with this. I think the pressures of you know, putting basically your health on the line to go to your job every day is heavy, and it's not just for healthcare workers. I mean, you might even think that it's less so for us because we're used to kind of being around sick people all the time and running the risk of catching something contagious. And
yes,
we kind of accepted that and live with it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. With Umatilla County's prevalence rate of COVID-19 cases, what do you think is in our community members' power to do during this time?
The same as it's been in our power to do from the beginning. And it's just understanding what is going on to the best of our ability and working on whatever leverage we have to make this easier on our society. I think that really comes back to, you know, the essentials that were known right from the beginning, and that's wearing a mask and keeping distant and keeping contained. I think none of those things have changed, and we're learning more that all these other, you know, treatments that we're trying, they're not great. They might help in some cases, but I think the reality is that we have to keep from getting sick, and that really just comes from, if you're sick, stay away from healthy people. And if you're healthy, stay away from sick people. And if you don't know the difference, then just wear a mask and keep your distance.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we've been moved back to baseline as of Friday last week. So though we've seen a steady climb in cases, our hospital is not overrun with COVID-19 hospitalizations. Our patient census does fluctuate day to day, but we aren't seeing too many hospitalizations, and we're able to preserve our PPE and have adequate staffing to care for our patients. What can you tell us about your perspective on this subject?
I think we've been lucky, and I've always said it's better to be lucky than good, but unfortunately I'm not sure we can depend on our luck for too long, so I think it's really just important to say, you know, even though our hospital's not being overrun, we have to kind of recognize the situation at large and protect ourselves and protect our facilities. I mean, just because it hasn't been overrun now doesn't mean it's not going to get overrun eventually. And I don't want that to happen. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed and hope we stay lucky.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine our listeners are curious if the hospital's visitation policy has changed now that the county has phased back to baseline. But let us assure you that it has not.
Correct. Our visitation policy still stands at one visitor per patient for all patients that do not have COVID-19 and are not under investigation for the virus. In-person visitors are still not permitted for patients diagnosed with the coronavirus or those being tested for the virus, with such exceptions such as pediatric patients, patients who have delirium or altered mental status and not able to answer questions for themselves, or with developmental delays, and, of course, patients receiving end-of-life care, etc. Different rules may apply in also some areas of our hospitals, including the critical care unit and the family birth center.
Yes, and additionally, all staff and visitors who enter Good Shepherd are screened at the entrances, and they are to be free of fever, cold, or flu-like symptoms. So patients can expect to continue being screened at all of the entrances. Also, you know, we recognize that visitation by family and friends can be an important therapeutic tool in the healing process, so we are pleased to be able to offer limited visitation safely with these restrictions in place. We also continue to encourage our patients to consider using phone calls and video chat, you know, such as FaceTime and Skype, to be in touch with loved ones. And our staff will assist with technology connection when needed. A couple other things to mention. Our education department classes, for the most part, have been rescheduled to be held via video conference indefinitely. So if our community members have a question about any of the education classes, they can call 541-667-3509. All education classes are also posted to Good Shepherd's website at www.gshealth.org. And many of the past classes have been posted to Good Shepherd's YouTube channel, if you're interested in checking that out. Also, Good Shepherd Pharmacy and Home Medical Equipment Divisions will continue to provide curbside deliveries. Community members may call the Good Shepherd Pharmacy at 541-667-3652 to arrange for curbside or free home delivery of their prescriptions, including over-the-counter items. Also, calling ahead to Good Shepherd Home Medical Equipment at 541-667-3477 can allow for inventory checks, payment, to arrange for curbside pickup during normal business hours, which is 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., and the medical equipment is located at 435 Northwest 11th Street in Hermiston. And last but not least, please, please remember all those coming to campus at Good Shepherd should remember to bring your mask or cloth face covering with you. If you do not have one at the door, we will provide you with a temporary mask or cloth face covering. So please try to remember that. So Dr. Fogg, I'd like to ask you some of our easier questions. What are some of your hobbies outside of work?
This is an easier question. So I used to like to do a lot more outdoor stuff, but that's been kind of curtailed lately. I've been finding myself occupied mainly with just binge-watching movies and TV shows with my new wife. Back in June and May, when it was a little bit cooler, we were having a good time kind of exploring all the biking through this town. And it's a wonderful place to cycle.
Yes.
This last week, we were kind of sick of watching movies, so we actually started taking road trips around Oregon and just kind of exploring places. So we look for some ghost towns to find, and turns out there's still people living there, so we didn't actually go and gawk very much. We just drove through the hills. And, basically every day we just put some random destination or a random chocolate maker in some little town and just go. Yesterday we found out what the how to pronounce Wallow is.
Right.
It's not what I thought.
I understand. And boy, are we blessed, because it's so fun to adventure through all of Eastern Oregon. So much to see, so much to learn, and so much to do. So I remember you mentioning in passing that you recently married the love of your life.
I did indeed. It was a little bit quicker than anticipated. I'd actually asked her to marry me back in March when I was on vacation with her.
Oh.
And when we got back from vacation, it turns out her job had been downsized because of coronavirus and some internal things going on at her previous employer. So we decided to move up the date a little bit and just, you know, get married in my living room so that we didn't have to pay the $1,000 a month of her Cobra, and I can get her onto my insurance benefits. So it was planned. It wasn't planned this way, but we promised my family and her family that we could have ceremonies in you know, next year or whenever, you know, the world gets back to normal, or once we're all used to this new normal that I think are might be more likely.
Well said. So last question, if someone was suffering from a condition that could be treated with internal medicine, what would you want them to take away from our conversation today?
So I have two things that I'd like people to take away. The first thing is I want people to remember that even though we've rolled back to baseline and essentially back in lockdown, things are business as usual at the hospital. You shouldn't be delaying your care for worries of, you know, getting sicker or getting someone else sick. If you feel like something is wrong, then you should be seen, and we'll do our best to see you either in person or virtually. The second thing is I want people to really just use me as a tool to empower themselves in their own healthcare decisions. I don't want to be dictating the plan of care for anybody. I want people to kind of know what I know and make informed and logical choices, because that's all that I do.
That's very empowering. Definitely a team approach. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Fogg, and especially for your diligence in meeting our community's healthcare needs safely during this time. You've made a huge difference in the lives of our patients and their ability to get back to their normal activities.
Well, believe me, it's an honor and a pleasure.
So if you're just joining us, our special guest today is internist Dr. Guy Fogg, who practices at Good Shepherd Medical Group's Internal Medicine Clinic, located at 600 Northwest 11th Street. It's Suite E37. If you would like to call with any questions for our internist team, you can reach them at 541-567-5305. Or you can visit our website at www.gshealth.org for more information. This is Good Health Live, brought to you by Good